Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or GamblingHelplineMA.org.
This. What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Gonzalez the batter, and he pops that one up into left field. Bogart's out. Benintendi in and under, and the Red Sox have won it. A shutout here today against the Cleveland Indians, 7-0. So the Sox clobber Cleveland for the second consecutive game and head to Tampa Bay with 90 victories, 9.5 up.
4:04 in the evening here on Felger and Mazz. We'll open the hour with a quick Felger and Mazz correction. Brazzers pitched last night.
Yeah.
I guess he pitched last night.
15 pitches, no hits, no walks.
Okay.
My mistake.
I wasn't watching a 10-4. Me neither. I didn't.
I mean, how could you stay up and watch these games, Mike?
Well, you know what? You want to know what my frustration is watching the game today? Is how quickly they move on these getaway days.
Oh, you mean like they're rushing because they want to get out of there?
Well, no, it's basically.
Yeah,
it's like
funny how that works out.
It's funny when your time is at stake, you actually move.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. When you have something to do, like a plane to catch, or your day to get on with, you actually move your ass. Ow, I get it. I see. When it's all of our times, it's a glove adjusting, cup grabbing, just whatever. Take the air out of the balloon. Take all the time you need. I don't know why I couldn't spit that out. But it's just so annoying, these afternoon getaway days. When the team's flying out, the umpires are flying out, and they've got flights to catch.
No, it's like, let's go. We got to get going. That's the way it should be every single night.
But no,
most of those nights,
they're going out to 3 a.m. anyway. The players and the ump's got a steak waiting for them at the Cap Grill. They'll be up till 2, so what's the diff? We will pick our ass for 3.5 hours.
Fourth game of a 7-game homestand, no rush.
Oh, but when it's a getaway day and they have somewhere to be, when they've actually got something to do, yeah, like the rest of us, strike one, let's go. Oh, that aggravates me. It still went 250 or whatever it was.
Still, that's pretty good.
But the first 5 innings were like, bang. Because they all had somewhere to be, somewhere to go.
That's why I don't give Price credit for this outing.
Well, Jimmy, come on.
So that's what frustrates me. Give me the David Price numbers again, McCone. McCone, the numbers you gave in the radio update.
8 scoreless innings, 3 hits while striking out 7.
Getaway day.
You gave me his last 8 or something, or since the All-Star
break? All right, so yeah, he has a 1.09 ERA and his 6 starts since the All-Star break. Red Sox are 16-2 in his last 18 starts, including 8-0 in his last 8.
Is anyone buying on David Price?
What do you mean by buying?
Are you buying on David Price? Do you have faith in him into the postseason?
No.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes. Every dog has his day. Every dog has his day, Murray. And I mean, why not? This is the whole trend of this whole team. This is this arc of the whole team. That he's going to get caught up in that wave, and he's going to win a playoff game. No. I'll promise you one. He's going to win a playoff game. He's going to win a playoff game this year, and you have right to have faith in him.
And maybe by default, because the offense is so good that they'll get him out of a jam. But I don't expect him to have a quality start in the postseason. I just don't.
Team is 16-2 behind him, McCone, and 6 starts since the All-Star break. It's a 1.09.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just not good. That is.
And there's good opponents in there, including today.
Exactly.
You know, the Yankees, although without Judge and Gary Sanchez, and the Phillies. So, you know, there's 3 really good quality starts in there as well.
You buying on David Price, folks? There's a question for you. Back to the phones. Here's Jake and Wareham on the Red Sox today. Go ahead, Jake.
Hey, I love you guys. First time caller, long time listener. But Jim, I don't know what you were talking about with Blake Swihart. If he ever comes in the playoffs, I'm going to lose my mind.
I mean, I agree.
I just think he has a role on the team. You know, he can be
he can be
a better option than Leon or obviously Vasquez out. Like,
I don't think so. I don't know, man. Leon is killing it.
So, I mean, not offensively, he's not. I mean, unless recently he's picked up some hits.
Look, there's obviously a comfort level with Chris Sale and that guy and other pitchers, but I don't know. I think Swihart can be, you know, can come off the bench and add some pop to this lineup. He proved it again today.
Well, just in case you're just joining us, it was really broken open by Blake Swihart. It was either a double or a single, a two-run hit in the whatever, third, fourth, fifth inning. So Moreland got injured today.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
For a foul ball, ran into like a partition or something like that.
Okay, and then took his at bat. And had his at bat and popped up. They dropped. But he got hurt on that at bat and then went out of the game. So Swihart came in for Moreland and had a big hit that really opened the whole floodgates. So, I mean, it was a good outing for Swihart, but I don't know. I'm not sure that that's a guy that I've
faced. You know what it is, too? Like, so I'm biased with the kid, and I usually don't, you know, typically get into, like, the corny storylines. But I feel like they screwed him. You know, and that's on John Farrell, too. Because, and they didn't know where the hell to really put him. Was he a left fielder? Is he a catcher? The talk was at the time when he first came up, he'd get up the pop and be like a poor man's Buster Posey. Like, I don't know. I kind of feel for the kid because it felt like to me, for most of the time in his tenure here, they've kind of screwed him.
Here's Dante in Maine on the Patriots receiving corps. Go ahead, Dante.
Hey, I think they're looking at it the wrong way. If you look at it like this, they cut Kenny Britt and Jordan Matthews. Kenny Britt's best season was in 2010 when he had 775 yards and 9 touchdowns. And Jordan Matthews had 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns in 2015. And the season before that, he had 8 touchdowns. And also, I think you're not giving Eric Decker the recognition he deserves. Because in 2012, 2013, he had 1,000 yards and 10-plus receptions.
So hold on. So, Dante,
this will be a million years ago.
Are you saying that the Pats made a mistake in cutting Britt and Matthews?
Yeah, and Decker, if you remember 2012, 2013, that was with Peyton Manning.
Okay, but that was 4-5 years ago. It was 5-6 years ago, however long. That was forever ago. I'm not going to get on the team for cutting Kenny Britt. He suffered a hamstring injury 78 days ago. And he hasn't been able to practice for 78 days with a hammy. See you later. How do you ever make 48? Never mind 78. 78 days? Holy crap.
It just goes to show you how desperate the situation is. They were really holding out. Like, that thing going to get better? Getting better? Getting better? Getting better? Finally, it feels like there was like a drop-dead date where it was like, okay, we're going to have to let you go here.
So how much longer can you wait for the guy's hamstring? And, you know, it's probably not his hamstring. It's probably his head or his heart. I mean, he's out there in pads every day, sort of just, you know, going half speed through this stuff. He's cutting out of practice early and then rolling around with his kids on the side field. He walks out with headphones on to football practice, which you just never, ever see. And the guy's out to lunch.
Browns didn't want this guy.
They gave him more than enough chance. Jordan Matthews, I don't know. You got to explain
his first couple of years in the league with the Eagles under Chip Kelly. He was, I've seen it statistically, he was the best slot receiver in the NFL for his first couple of seasons. And it was like over 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns, 2 consecutive years. He had dealt with injuries, and it's why they ended up letting him go here. Hey, maybe he comes back. That was a guy I was kind of holding out some hope for. And I didn't like the wide receiver core when he was still here. And now he's gone. Britt's gone. Malcolm Mitchell, which is such a bummer. He's gone too. How do you feel good about this?
It's a
because Brady makes bad receivers good. It's not sustainable.
He doesn't make them that good. It's just a legit personnel second guess. I mean, so you don't go out and add to the receiving core because you think Britt, Matthews, Malcolm Mitchell is going to come through for you and be one of those guys. 0-3. 0-3. Now you're left with Eric Decker, who feels like a complete basket case. And as I said earlier, I think the story's pretty much over. It's too late. It's too late to find someone to come in and get Brady's trust and pick up the offense and be a factor this year. I think it's done. I think it's cast in stone. Your receivers suck, and they will suck. And they're just going to have to, if they can win throwing to running backs, and if Gronk can stay healthy, then maybe they're fine. But I don't know. Something tells me they won't be offensively. Mike on the Cape. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Good. What do you got?
Patriots' worst year receiving was 2006, in your opinion?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so in 2006, the top four receivers for the Patriots all finished within the top 50 of the league. And the Patriots finished around 10th for receiving yards and I think 6th or 7th for touchdowns. And those guys were way worse. Ben Watson is worse than Gronk. Troy Brown's on the decline. You get some young guys. So it's about the same idea.
Hold on. Say that first thing you said to me, please. That they're top five.
The top four receivers for the Patriots all finished within the top 45 or 50 in reception.
Okay, so what does that mean? So wait a minute. So they had the 42nd, 43rd, 47th, and 48th leading receiver in the league?
No. They had the 23rd, the 30th, the 40th, and the 45th, something like that.
Okay, I don't think that that's good. I mean, that doesn't feel good to me. Rashe Caldwell led you in receptions with 61. Then you had Ben Watson with 49. Then Kevin Faulk with 43, tied with Troy. Love you, mean it, but cashed by that point.
Towards the end of his career.
43. I'm sorry. There's no way you can talk if you were, I don't know, I should have asked you how old you were. If you were alive and old enough to consume that season, there was no way you could tell me that that was good enough. Did they get to the fourth quarter of the AFC title game? Yup. Did they have any business being there? Nope. I mean, they got there because San Diego absolutely crapped their pants the week before in a game that they should have won. And I don't know, you tell me, if the Patriots had one more receiver, had a better core around Brady, they get to the Super Bowl.
They're Mike, I'll be mad about that year for the rest of my life. And they've since won, what, two more titles, been to three, four Super Bowls since that point. That 06 year, they let him out. They hung Brady out to dry. He played out of his mind. I think he was 29 years old at the time. If they just had one guy, hell, if they signed Deion Branch, they get out of Indy, and then they go and automatically beat the Bears, who have Rex Grossman starting a quarterback that year. Oh, God, that one makes me mad forever.
Okay, so, I mean, will the Patriots be quote-unquote fine? Yes, they'll be fine, yes. They'll win the division, yes. We'll see you in the playoffs. I mean, no one's saying that. It's, again, there's a little bit of a different standard here. And just the way to look at it is...
Look at the Jacksonville AFC Championship game, that fourth quarter. Who's going to be the Danny Amendola?
Are they as good as they can be? No, they're not. And if Brady drags this receiving core to the championship game, to the Super Bowl this year, with this group, at this age, coming off of no work in the spring, then, you know...
Yeah, it could be his greatest accomplishment. I mean, accomplishment.
You will be allowed to put a ball gag in me, McCone. You can ball gag me and tie me up and put me in the corner and do whatever you want with me. Okay?
Hard
so
pass,
that,
yeah.
If he drags this group to the Super Bowl, ball gag me and throw me in the corner. More of your thoughts right after. Oh, guess who was on the team playing today? We'll talk about that coming back.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Belger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Coach, would you say that Tom's relationship with his trainer is like if your adult son or child was hanging out with somebody you didn't really care for all that much? I mean, it's your adult child. What are you supposed to say?
I'm not really sure of the question. I mean, talking about my children, I don't think that's appropriate here. Like, I'm trying to coach a football team.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make it part. I was just thinking.
What are we talking about here?
I just meant, is it something that kind of frustrates you because it takes the focus off of him taking coaching from you, in your opinion?
Again, there's a lot of pronouns there. Like, I don't really know who's talking about what.
One of many insightful conversations with Bill Belichick on the subject of Alex Guerrero over the years. This has all been through back channels and reports that I all believe, by the way, because I think both camps have been dropping dimes like you wouldn't believe. Belichick's people, maybe Belichick himself, Brady's people, even Brady himself. You know, I just think all these guys have talked to the Seth Wickershams and the Bob Holers on their own time and just not put it on the record. You get them behind the podium, you get nothing out of it. But, you know, I think it's pretty clear what has gone on here over the years with Alex Guerrero. Again, I'm just reading from the Bob Holer piece. Last year, last December, reporting what it was widely understood to be Belichick banning Guerrero from basically, you know, the team, for lack of a better term. I mean, Holer writes that Belichick had permitted Guerrero, Brady's close friend and business partner, to secure his own office near the Patriots locker room, fly on team charters to road games, and receive credentials to work the sidelines of every game home and away. But this season, meaning late last year, but this season, the Patriots coach has reversed course. For reasons he has declined to explain, Belichick weeks ago stripped Guerrero of his special team privileges, restoring a measure of tradition to the team's medical and training operation, according to several people familiar with the Patriots' internal operations. Guerrero is now banned from boarding Patriots jets. His sideline access has been revoked, and he no longer is permitted to treat players other than Brady in his exclusive office at Gillette Stadium. Holer writes that the development has created some friction in Foxborough, where Belichick and Brady have collaborated over 18 years to help create blah, 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 blah. All right, so fast forward to today.
And it feels like at least part of Alex Guerrero's privileges have been restored. He's on the team plane to Carolina. We'll see tomorrow night if he's on the sideline or not. But at least some of his privileges have been restored. How do you read that, Murray?
To me, it reads as the three of them finally sat down. And they've had a thawing of the palace queue here. And by the three, I mean Belichick, Brady, and most importantly, the mediator, Robert Kraft. It seems to me like they finally had the conversation here. And that started with the contract, which made no sense to me. And I don't know why Brady wouldn't have just torn that thing up and thrown it in Bill and Robert's face. Get out of here. I just won the MVP. What? You don't think that I can... An incentivized contract? This is something you give to some bum like Jameis Winston, who's always in trouble. You give this to me? Okay, so there had to be something else to that contract. What's the give? Feels like the give to me is Alex Guerrero. Robert doesn't obviously knows that Bill feels very strongly about Alex Guerrero in a certain kind of way, doesn't want him around. And he says, all right, Bill, put the contract together, have it incentivized, because you don't trust that Tom is going to be committed here. Write it your way, but the give has to be Alex Guerrero. Can you live with that? Is it that big of a deal? The grump said, fine. They all come together, and that's it. It does feel like we've had a thawing here, and that the three of them finally sat down and had the conversation.
And figured some things out. And it's really a thing that's easy to figure out, which is, Bill, if he promises to cut the crap, just let him back on.
Yeah.
All right?
He won't undermine you. He won't undermine the staff. But so just let him around.
We'll go to Alex. You know, man to man, eye to eye, heart to heart. Alex, cut the crap. Cut the crap. If we want our guys to lift weights, they're going to lift weights. Don't tell them not to do it.
Because I've been with Gaspar on this, though. I do believe that Guerrero was that important to Brady and that he wanted to have him.
Well, no, but I'm just saying to figure this all out, you go to Alex and say, Alex, stop it. Stop undermining our doctors and our trainers. Easy enough. If someone wants a deep tissue massage, give it to them. They want nutrition advice, give it to them. But don't undermine our doctors. Don't undermine our trainers. Okay? And Alex should say yes. Okay, of course. I'll cut the crap. So, all right, Alex, you're back on the plane. And Bill says, well, wait a minute. I don't want him on the plane. And Robert says, Bill, he's agreed to cut the crap. Would you just, you know, let him back on? He'll be a good boy. If he's not, we'll take him back off. Fine. Tom, you get your trainer back. What about my contract? You're going to have to suck it on the contract. But you got your trainer back, so deal with it. We'll figure it out. You know, so like, there was clearly a deal to be made there.
Definitely.
And
so I'll ask you again, who won?
So Brady, you know, even though Brady didn't get everything that he wanted, because I think he wants a bigger contract, but he got everything else. He got everything else.
Except wide receivers.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. Is that Bill's revenge? But, you know, Garoppolo's out of here. Alex is back. So he got two of the three. He didn't get the money, but he got two of the three, which shows you what's most important, you know, for these NFL owners. Fine, we'll get rid of the backup, no problem. We'll put the trainer back on the plane, but you ain't getting more money.
Yeah.
So, but he got two of the three things that I think he wanted. So did Bill get two of the three things that he wanted?
No.
I mean, the contract is probably...
That's a win for Bill.
I mean, like, that's amenable to Bill. If Bill were in charge of giving Brady extra money, that's how it would look. You have to finish in top five in yards per attempt. Like, that's a Belichick contract. So he got a little measure there. And who knows? Let's see what Guerrero's full access is. He's on the plane, but is he going to be roaming the sidelines like we've seen on these cuts with the Patriots, you know, the Patriots logoed shirt?
He's got to be, because that's a half measure to Brady. If he gets to go, but then what? You got to buy him a ticket and he's got a seat like the rest of the schlubs like me? Like, no, there's no half measures here. If I'm Tom Brady, I say, no, it's full access again. He travels with the team. He's on the sidelines. He's essentially a team employee.
So I mean, I think Brady won, even though he didn't get everything that he wanted.
Then again, that wide receiver core, man.
So he gets left with an incentive-laden, you know, a little teaser to his contract that is going to have a hard time picking up given the crap he's been surrounded with and the fact that he blew off, you know, basically the whole offseason. So I think he's going to have a hard time reaching those numbers. But either way, If Gaspar and the Brady people keep telling me the most important thing to him was the trainer. So the trainer's back, at least partly.
Well, it's just not about the day-to-day and the working on him and getting him ready for game day. It's about the brand. I mean, Alex Guerrero is TB12. He's the walking embodiment of that brand, you know. To have him around again, it lends credence to what is going to be the most important thing to Tom post-football.
So it's just interesting going back and reading the background on, you know, the break between Guerrero and the team and the problems between Belichick and Guerrero. And there's been, you know, lots of reports on it. The Seth Wickersham piece on ESPN is the best. He writes that in 2013, Murray, 2013, Belichick had welcomed Guerrero into the New England fold, giving him free reign in the building and, sources with direct knowledge of the situation say, access to meetings in which medical records for Patriots players were discussed. Guerrero denied that, by the way. But Wickersham continues that the coach figured that because Guerrero had Brady's best interests in mind, he probably had the Patriots' best interests in mind, too, and could be trusted.
Womp womp.
But Guerrero often would blame Patriots trainers for injuries while offering few insightful opinions of his own, and Belichick quickly realized inviting him in had been a mistake. And so in 2014, he eliminated Guerrero's access to those meetings while keeping him on as a team consultant. But, you know, a guy like Brandon Cook sits there and goes, well, how do I get the ball from Brady? How do I... Well, he's really keen about this trainer guy, and all the guys that go to him, Amendola, Hogan, Gronk, they get the ball. So maybe I go to Guerrero. And then the team doctor looks at him and says, well, wait a minute, what about, you know, and the trainer says, well, wait, we got this program for you. And so now Cooks is like, well, what the hell do I do? And as Wickersham writes, all these players were in a spot where they had to choose between pissing off the greatest coach of all time or the greatest quarterback of all time. And so what do you do? And so that all that started happening, and then Belichick said, enough, enough. You're off the plane, you're off the sideline. You can work on Brady at the stadium, but no one else. If anyone wants to see you, they got to schlep up to the clinic there at the top of the hill, and that's that. And that happened last year, and that further pissed Brady off because he's selling Guerrero. That's part of his whole pitch of this new lifestyle brand. And so Brady doesn't even just take that as a personal affront. He thinks that that's hurting his business. That's taking money out of his pocket. So that's the whole rift right there in a nutshell. And now he's back. So something went down.
And again, you rehash this stuff, and it just proves, I think, how much Belichick despises this guy and just how, you know, look, Bill's, you know, an old school football type of guy. To be undermined, to have his guys undermined on the training staff, and to look at him, and he's probably at him as like a quack. He knows the history and all. I think it's a big give. I really do. And so now it makes that awful contract make sense because there had to be some sort of hidden incentive, and it feels like with Guerrero being on that plane, and we'll see if he's going to be on the sideline tomorrow night. I have to imagine he will be. That was the incentive. That was the hidden incentive. That's why Tom signed this thing.
I'm just telling you, I've always felt this was a risky association for Brady. Like, I've always wondered, like, why this guy? He's not the only one who can give you a massage. He's just not. And he's not the only one that, you know, tells you carbs and sugar are bad. Like, I mean, he's not the only guy who can do this. Yet this is a guy that has been sanctioned twice by the federal government for false claims about his products. That one, he said, could cure cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. The other, he said, could help prevent concussions. Sanctioned by the FTC and the federal government twice. Said he was a doctor. He wasn't. I mean, there's just all sorts of stuff with this guy. And then one of his prime clients just got popped for steroids. So it's like, whether those are unfair associations or not.
Are we shady?
They're there. Those are the associations. And now he's not on your staff, but he's kind of on your staff. And it's like, I think there's some risk there with the Patriots. That if Alex messes up again, that's on them. Now it's really on them. So, you know, hopefully Alex keeps his nose clean. We're discussing all of that with the receiver situation in the Red Sox. I promise, right back to you after McCone's update.
Sports Hub Headlines.
All right, Red Sox picking up a 7-0 win over the Indians at Fenway Park this afternoon. Blake Swihart with a double that drove in two. Xander Bogaerts with a double of his own that brought in two more. Eduardo Nunez followed that up with a double that added two more runs. And then J.D. Martinez tacked on an RBI single. David Price, by the way, picking up the win. He went 8 scoreless innings, only allowing 3 hits while striking out 7. After the game, Alex Cora said Mitch Moreland, who left the game with a bruise on his knee, is day-to-day. Interesting nugget this afternoon regarding the Pats, as you heard here first on 98.5 The Sports Up from Felger. Tom Brady's trainer, Alex Guerrero, on the team plane for the trip to Carolina. Remember, last season, Belichick revoked Alex Guerrero's access to team flights. Patriots getting ready for preseason game number 3 against the Panthers. You can catch that one right here on 98.5 tomorrow night with kickoff at 7:30. And elsewhere in the NFL, Field Yates reporting that the Raiders have waived injured 2017 second-round pick Obi Melifonwu. The defensive back is a Central Mass native. Sports of Headlines brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Visit now for a 15-minute oil change. You can stay in your car. No appointment is ever needed. I'm Tim McCone, Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports. Every next update, 30 minutes.
Every afternoon, it's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Really is a difference maker.
Ooh. Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
Ah, 4 is just a number.
Ah.
It's just a number.
Right there is exclusive sound of Chris Gasper today upon hearing the news that Alex Guerrero has been let back onto the team plane. Chris is very excited. Chris has been lobbying for Guerrero to get back into the fold for months.
Well, as have I.
40 is just a number.
No. Yeah. Hashtag Brady won.
Brady won.
I just don't feel. I don't feel so confident that I want to tweet it, though, because, again, I look at that wide receiver core and how, Bill, I feel like, left Tom high and dry with those wide receivers.
That is what it sounds like, Brady getting a massage from Guerrero.
Same with me. I'm very vocal when I get up.
I'll tell you what. Someone did that to me, I'd want him on my plane, too. This guy's traveling with me on my plane. He makes me feel like that. Yeah, this guy's going wherever I'm going.
Getting out all those knots and toxins.
Yeah. Give me David Price again since the All-Star break, McCone. Six starts, 109 ERA, correct?
Yeah, and then 16-2 in his last 16-2 in his last 18 starts.
Yeah, suck it, Murray.
That's the sound of this is the reaction when Red Sox beat writers hear that. Hear those numbers, that's what the sound is. Are you buying on David Price? I'm about to. I think I have. I told you he's going to win a postseason game this year. Every dog has his day.
As a starter or reliever?
Starter. No. Starter. He's going to win a game this year. And then I'll reassess. But he's going to win this year. Every dog has his day.
He's not.
He's pitched that well, and it's this kind of year for the Red Sox. Raul and Haverhill, how do you feel about that take?
My hand's cold.
Go ahead, Raul.
How you guys doing, gents? I'm a big fan. The reason why I believe in David Price is just because if you notice since the All-Star break, he's changed his approach how he pitches. Instead of trying to overpower pitches like, batters how he used to throwing 99 miles an hour, he changed his approach. First pitch, he's throwing changeups, and for some reason, it's helping his control out. If you notice, any time, I much rather have a pitcher that has control because everybody's throwing over 95 nowadays. And because he's starting with that changeup, it's been working for him, and he has way more command, and it's helping him out. He has more like the Sabathia approach.
Okay, so, Raul, thanks for the call. I won't dispute any of that. All due respect, though, is David Price and his postseason lack of postseason success about his approach?
No.
It's about his balls or his heart or whatever.
It's what's in between his ears.
I mean, he's had some amazing regular seasons, only to crap himself when it matters most. So, I mean, I'm not disputing his adjustment. Great. He's made a good adjustment.
I mean, even that cup of coffee he had with the Toronto Blue Jays, he was ridiculous when he was with them, and they go to the postseason, and he fails again.
Didn't they put him in the bullpen or something?
Yeah, what did Doug Gibbons do at that time? God, I forget.
But either way, it's like, so, I mean, he's had great years before and then not come through, so the not coming through is not about the approach. It's about something else. But, like I
said, what was the quote at the time with like the water off the duck's back, and then he was talking about the postseason, and it was like, no.
He's like a duck where on the surface he's all calm and you wouldn't know anything's wrong, but underneath the water, the
legs are going all crazy, and that's what my head's like. Oh, it's like scrambled eggs.
So he admits to it. Let's see if he can slow it down this year just a little bit. Mac in California, what do you want to do about the Patriots receiving core?
Greetings, fellas. So it's Dez Bryant. If he can't learn the playbook, fine. But in 1 week, so I got two quick points on that. There has to be three formations and like 10 to 12 plays they can use them right from the beginning. And then two, the notoriously cheap craft now that the Pats are $7 million under the cap. Murray, look it up.
So
no, Mac. You look it up.
So they have the money to sign. Brian, that's not the issue. I don't think they'll. My guess is, they have the money, but they don't want to pay him the money that he wants because.
You should have just paid Danny Amendola.
You should have just brought back Amendola. Thank you. You should have just brought back Amendola. It wasn't that bad of an overpay by Miami. It wouldn't have taken much to match it, and you wouldn't have had to have matched it. Get it to 75, 80%. He would have stayed. And it wasn't that much. It was $6 million guaranteed over 2 years, I think. Like, he got 2x12, but only 6 of it was guaranteed. And so $3 million a year guaranteed. Make it 275. He stays. Like, you know, tell me that wouldn't change your outlook of this receiving corps if he were still here.
We wouldn't be having this conversation at all.
Thank you. So that was my second guess from the beginning. Bob in Marlboro joins us on the Red Sox in baseball. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, I was talking about yesterday. I called yesterday. It was one of the old folk that called yesterday, and I kind of got played on at the end. I think you might have remembered it, all the old folk that called yesterday.
That's right.
But
I hope you don't mind. Taken in the spirit with which it is given, Bob. We give each other a hard time for a lot of stuff, so.
Oh, I understand that. No, I understand that. I'm saying that your show gets on at 2 o'clock in the afternoon to 6. And a lot of the old folk listen to it.
Yes, no, we've noticed, especially when we talk baseball at 2. That is like...
Yeah, you taxi cab drivers, guys who drive at night, the regular guys that listen to baseball, they don't get on. They're working stiffs. I'm a retired stiff. So,
all right, Bob, it's good having you. How do you feel about the Red Sox after those last two games?
Well, I don't like you guys sniffing on Price too much, and I don't care about that. I agreed with personal opinions. You have your personal opinions about each player. But as I'm saying, I just called to say that let's take it easy on the old folks.
Okay, Bobby, thank you. All right, call anytime.
Yes, perhaps the show's been too ageist.
On David Price. He's been an a-hole who's sucked in big games. I mean, why should I like him? He's been an a-hole off the field who's sucked when it's mattered most. I mean, I don't know why I should like him. Or why, like, I feel generous saying I think this is going to be the year he breaks through in the postseason. There's nothing to back that up.
And an excuse-making a-hole to boot.
An excuse.
The video games, allergies.
I think Price has deserved everything that he's gotten.
Yeah,
I mean, if you come here and produce and, you know, and even act a little snippy. Like, I think J.D. Martinez, if you read some of the stuff he said about how he feels disrespected and whatnot, like, he comes off a little whiny himself. But he's produced.
Yeah, and I also think...
And he's just played, and so no one gives him a hard time.
In his case, I almost think it's a little different. He's using it as a motivational factor. With Price, I just think that's just his personality. He's just bitchy.
Long commercial-free segment is next. A great time to jump aboard and give us a call. We'll talk to you right after this.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Do the Pats need Dez right now?
They don't need Dez right now. I just don't think he's that kind of guy, that kind of receiver they want in this type of offense. Obviously, people are seeing some things in the guy that they may not care for a whole lot. I just don't think he runs the type of routes the Patriots want from a receiver right now. That's the kind of guy they're trying to find. But I just don't think they should waste their time going after Dez Bryant. He's not as explosive as he used to be.
Troy Brown on NBC Sports Boston. The explosiveness in that piece is only part of it to me. I just think the whole thing about getting up to speed, it's just so hard to do. It's so hard to do. It's so hard to do on any team, never mind this one. And I just ran through it again. I had a little bit of an epiphany last night as I was just considering this, because I have been someone that previously thought, okay, it's time to, you know, roll the dice on Dez Bryant. The receiving core is that putrid. So bring him in. And I started to think about it. Like, we're 2 weeks out from the regular season. You've got a week and a half left of practice. Like, it's tick tock.
Let's go.
Late in the game.
Yeah.
And so, like, I know it's hard enough as a first-year receiver with Brady. You know, that's a real hit-and-miss proposition to come in here year one and get on the same page. Some guys have done it. A lot of guys haven't. But then when I went back and looked at it, the guys that did catch on, and when I say catch on, I'm not talking about setting the world on fire like Moss in 07. I'm talking about just giving you what I think the team needs. Like, for example, Brandon LaFell in 2014. 74 catches, 953 yards, 7 touchdowns. That would be a perfect outside compliment guy who can play outside the numbers. Not a top off the defense guy, which I don't need, but I do need someone to, you know, play the sideline and, you know, have the defense respect that part of the field. That I do need. That's all LaFell did. I'd take that. He did it in year one. Another example is Brandon Lloyd. 2012 did something very similar. 74 catches, 911 yards. Played outside the numbers. Amendola's first year, even though he was hurt, still had 54 grabs. You know, even like someone like Kemble Tompkins, 2013, caught 32 balls, a couple of touchdowns. Gave you just what you needed. I mean, and ultimately it wasn't good enough, but I mean, I'd take that at this point. Brandon Cooks last year, for as uneven as his play was sometimes, he did have 65 catches, over 1,000 yards, and 7 touchdowns. He'd look really good in this group right now. But then I thought, what do all those guys have in common? Here's what they have in common. Brandon Lloyd signed second week of free agency in March, was here all spring, all summer, full training camp, full passing camp, full off-season workouts. Brandon LaFell signed second week of free agency in March, full off-season workouts, full passing camps, full spring camps, full training camp, hits the ground running with Brady. Hogan, signed as a restricted free agent in March, was there for the very beginning of the offseason program. Brandon Cooks traded here the first week of free agency, had a full run-up with Brady in camp, in the playbook, in the building, in spring, in the summer, into the fall. Yes, I'm going back to Brady missing the offseason. It's both. So, you know, I don't know. Is it any coincidence that what's-his-face there from Atlanta, Jordan Matthews, doesn't work out when Brady hardly threw to the guy until they got into the summer?
It was an injury thing with Jordan Matthews.
Well, both, I guess. I don't know. And I just think it's part. So what I'm saying is, so I'll roll that back. Let me just say this, that the guys that have come here and worked in year one had a full offseason.
Have been here since
From day one. And I think that's important. I do. Earning Brady's trust, getting in the playbook with him, being out there on a daily basis, timing, the route tree, again, all of that stuff. The guys that they picked up in midstream, there's only one that worked out. There's only one guy they picked up in midstream that worked out, and that was Deion Branch in 2010, and that is extenuating circumstances, and you know it. It came up in this Patriots system, was, what'd you call it, Murray, a mind meld with Brady?
Yeah.
I mean, those guys were on the same page for years. Then they had a couple-year gap, and he comes back. So that's not like picking up someone cold off the street. Everybody else, Moss, Welker, Stallworth, that great 07 year, they were all new that year. They were all here from day one, except for Moss. Moss was traded for in April, so he was here for some of the passing camps and the mini camp. Then he got hurt in training camp and didn't play, but he was with the team and in the building. So Moss is kind of learning
the playbook, learning the system, been around. It's not like they're picking him up mid-October.
He was still there.
Yeah.
He was still there, but he wasn't on the field. So, like, I'll grant you that. That was sort of in between these guys. But everybody else I mentioned was there on day one earning Brady's trust. The guys that have been picked up midstream, the examples I gave you were Dorsett last year. He was traded for on September 2nd, which was just after camp had concluded. Michael Floyd was picked up in December of 16 at the end.
He was useless.
It was a mess. And Keyshawn Martin, here's another one, September 16th, early on in the season in 2015. He had 24 catches that year, was cut the next year. Like, it's just really hard to get on the same page with Brady with just, you know, without having a full camp or full offseason under your belt. And you know what? It's hard in the league. We looked it up, too.
Right. Just last year as an example. Kelvin Benjamin, now granted, he goes to the Bills. They have Tyrod Taylor there, and there was Nathan Peterman for a game, which was stupid, but still, he did nothing when he ended up going to Buffalo from Carolina. He ended up having one touchdown.
It's just hard. It's hard to pick, you know, receiver. If your offense is any halfway decent or halfway complicated, it's just hard. I mean, and McCone went back and looked at some things historically. I mean, it rarely works out. Percy Harvin went from Seattle to the Jets in 2004. Nothing. Moss, when he left here in 2010, went to the Vikings. Nothing. Then was released and went to the Titans and did even less. Roy Williams, remember him? One of those...
One of those awful draft picks in Detroit.
Right, exactly.
By Matt Millen.
Where Detroit drafted a receiver like in the first round, like five straight years or something. He was one of them. He was traded to Dallas in 08, did nothing. There were a couple who did a little something. Like, we found one that did something as a midseason acquisition. Brandon Lloyd went from Denver to Seattle in 2011 and had a good year for the Rams. But there's extenuating circumstances as well, because Josh McDaniels was the offensive coordinator in St. Louis. He was also the head coach in Denver in 09 when Lloyd was there.
That was his guy.
So that was his guy. That was the same offense. So it's not just a Brady thing. It's everybody. It's hard to integrate these guys midstream. Unless there's a guy with a history in your system. There's only one we can think of is this Brandon LaFell.
Yeah. Braylon Edwards was another.
Okay,
good,
so we also found Braylon Edwards, which wasn't a bad one. He was on the Browns. He was traded to the Jets in 09. And if I remember, Braylon Edwards, 09 and 2010, even in the next year, was a factor on that team.
Yeah.
So that's I'll give you a half on that.
And that's with Mark Sanchez. Ugh.
But either way. So it's just hard. It's just hard to do. Which is, led me to believe the receiver situation is hopeless. Hopeless. The receivers suck now. They'll suck at the end of the year. That's just what it's going to be.
I'll steal a take from a caller that dropped. How about trying to trade with the Cincinnati Bengals and getting A.J. Green? I know you don't like the player, but I would do that.
I would rather be ball gagged by Tim McCone and tied up and thrown in the corner than give up a first. If they trade a first round pick for A.J. Green, I'm out.
Well, it feels like Bill doesn't know what to do with a first round pick. It's been since 2012 since he got an impact player.
I mean, not that I was ever in, but I'm out. I hate A.J. Green.
Why?
Oh, he's just the guy that I hate. Just run down the field. Whee! you know, chuck and duck. He'll give you, you know, he's a good fantasy player because he gets a billion yards and he'll hit the big home run ball. But you can shut him. He is soft as puppy crap, man. You can, you just get up into him. He will not fight through coverage. I don't know. He doesn't even really run routes. He's not a tough player. I can't. AJ Green is the exact kind of receiver I hate. Oh, I hate it. He takes the top off the defense, and six times a year, he has a big highlight on ESPN with a 70-yard touchdown catch. Big effing deal.
Oh, I like him. I think he's underrated.
Oh, I hate those guys. Oh, I hate the AJ Greens of the world. Just the kind of guy I hate. Now, you want to talk to me about Larry Fitzgerald? I'll still take Larry Fitzgerald. That's a guy.
That's a crime that he's still in Arizona.
Larry Fitzgerald is a guy who I think, even though he's never played in the system, could do it. He's tough, gets open short, comes back to the ball, fights for the ball. Amazing hands. He's a pro's pro. He's hardworking, dedicated, wants to win. At the end of his Larry Fitzgerald, I would still take in a heartbeat. Heartbeat. Now, that's a guy who has no experience with Brady, no experience in the system, but I think could pick it up because he's just such a smart, hardworking guy.
Anything else you like about Larry Fitzgerald?
His ass.
That guy right there crosses his mind.
Listen, it amazes you, but no one can say I'm wrong.
I'm telling you, I think there's a scouting combine category, like a box that needs to be checked for ass. I think Felger's onto something.
So that's from a million years ago in a different incarnation. But yes, he's just physical and big and...
Oh, I'm taking him too.
Love him. Catches the ball in
Not
traffic.
Like Larry Fitzgerald, man. That is a rump to save all rumps, I'm telling you.
It really is. All-star took us. Okay, so there's your reset on the Patriots receiving situation. Red Sox win. Guerrero's back on the team. Plain details here in the update from McCone and the receiver situation, which I think is hopeless. We discuss with you on the phones right after this. No commercials.